excited. I have a new computer that I debuted last week. I didn't make a big deal about it, I don't think. But yeah, I have a new computer now, so this is doing well. I was just saying before we went on how I'm like now trained nervously that everything's just going to turn off. And so I'm just looking at everything all the time, but I don't have to because this should work. At least until, you know, I drop it like 4 or 5 times on concrete like the other one.
Did you get a case? You need a laptop case.
The first time it happened, it fell out of like a suitcase that I didn't realize was unzipped as I was pulling it out of a car.
Was it the yellow one?
No, it was not the yellow one.
See, did you actually get that from the prop trailer?
No, that was actually a family suitcase that I use as a prop in every show that we did.
Oh, okay. Tom had a really old yellow suitcase that he would use to go on vacation and in shows. You used it on vacation too, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. It was easy to find in any luggage thing, whatever you call those things, you know. It was like French's mustard yellow. So, all right. So thank you all for listening to our show. Tom reminisces about old pieces of luggage he had.
That's what the people listen to us for.
That's it. It's the content that everyone needs. Podcast.
All right. What is it? 9:04? All right. I think it's time to start if you guys are both ready.
I'm ready.
All right. So let's get started.
Okay.
Welcome to Talk Around Riyadh, the Wheel of Time showcast. I am your host, Joe Perry, here with my co-host, Jen Isgrow. How are you doing tonight, Jen?
I am here and I am ready to go, Joe.
Perfect. I like to hear that. And how is our other co-host, Tom Kokoza? How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. I don't feel as, as alpha confident as Jen does, but I am excited to be here. This should be a fun show tonight.
Well, that's okay. We all can't be alphas because then this wouldn't work, I don't think.
Yeah, we look like a squadron of fighters.
All right. So we'll get right into it. And I'm going to be honest and upfront. There's really not much news this week. So I'm just going to go off a little bit and kind of recap some stuff from last show and what went on during the week of Wheel of Time. And we're going back to the whole pronunciation of the land.
Awesome.
So I put a poll up on Twitter earlier in the week to get the Twitter of Time community's thoughts on how to pronounce LAN. And I put three options. I put L-A-N, LAN as in, I think I put man in parentheses to rhyme with man. Then I put LON, L-O-N, and I put Don in parentheses to as like a similar sounding word. And then I put, I think lawn.
Yeah.
And did I put the word lawn or did I put pawn or something like that?
I think
I put pawn as the word. So I realized that was a mistake quickly after when a lot of people said, isn't L-O-N and L-A-W-N the same?
Yeah. For most people, it is.
Yeah. Jen pointed out, well, not if you live in New York. Yeah. So
Don and lawn are two different pronunciations for us, but for most people, they are not.
So do most people say lawn and Don, or do they say Don and lawn?
Lawn, Don and lawn. That's what I would think. Lawn.
You think most people say lawn like lawn? I don't know.
Not
man.
Like lawn, like lawn, I would say it. Like lawn, if I was pronouncing it with like a regular accent. I don't know.
I would say a regular accent.
Regular.
Yeah. So, like, I guess in my pronunciation, I have lan, lawn, and lawn.
But who is pronouncing it lawn? Nobody would say that.
Well, people were typing it in, L-A-W-N, in the chat, so that's why I put it there.
I
didn't realize that it was the same as lawn, because, you know, most people speak properly and we don't.
Right.
Anyway, overwhelmingly, L-A-N, LAN, the man, won, right? But that wasn't the end of it.
No.
The general consensus, I think the score, it was like 90-something percent of the, or 80-something percent of the people said L-A-N, LAN, the man.
We had a lot of votes, too.
There was. It was like 700 votes, so thanks everyone for voting on that. So we thought it was over, and then Dragon Mount retweeted us and replied, and I quote, I mean, Robert Jordan settled this decades ago. It doesn't rhyme with man. So I assumed they meant it was pronounced lawn.
Right.
Yeah. And not even thinking, I also thought people say man differently. Some say man, like an, and some say man, like ah, ah, or eh. If you're from New York,
man,
you say eh.
Man is not correct. It's man. Definitely not correct.
It's man, right? Yeah.
Man dragon. Man.
So I had to,
it's
you know,
a cookbook.
So I gave in to them. You know, I mean, you know, Dragon Mount, Jason Denzel, I'm sure, you know, who was close with Robert Jordan, you know, knew would know how it was. And I think even Jennifer Liang from Jordan Con also said that Harriet and Team Jordan say it that way too. So I kind of gave up and I was a little discouraged, but I was really happy because at Kramer Reading, which is Michael Kramer and Kate Redding's Twitter account, who do the audiobooks for Wheel of Time, actually responded to us. And they settled it once and for all, because of course what they say is canon. And they responded that it is pronounced Pete.
Right. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you. So thank you, Kate Redding and Michael Kramer, for that, because that really made our days. But there's more to the story.
But
it
then,
doesn't end there, people.
The twists continue.
The twist continues. So yesterday, last night, which was Thursday, the Dusty Wheel did a special show for 500K subscribers, and they did a little pronunciation
500K?
Guide
is that right?
No, 5K.
No, I'm sorry, 5K. I'm
like,
sorry.
Wait a minute. Whoa, that's a lot.
I got a little ahead of myself. So they did, it was a 5K subscriber bonus show. It was a Q&A, but Matt did a little pronunciation segment, obviously with all the Twitter time abuzz about the pronunciation of LAN. And he did a few different pronunciations. He did Tarvalon, which in the books, I believe it's pronounced Tarvalon, or at least it's written
in the books,
in the pronunciation guide, Tarvalon. Yeah. When the books first came out, I always said Tarvalon.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, like, I changed it because I think I realized that the book said it was something different. And I know, Tom, you were on the Tarvalon bandwagon as well, right?
Yeah, I was on the Tarvalon bandwagon because of what the name influence of it was.
Yeah. And to be honest, Tarvalon is a little easier to say. So I think that's also why I switched over. But So anyway, Matt found a clip of Robert Jordan at a book signing saying Tarvalon.
Mm-hmm.
So he was very happy about that one, because that was something that always bothered him. There was another pronunciation. Oh, God, what was the second one that they did?
Machin Sheen.
Oh, Machin Sheen.
Machin Sheen. Yeah.
Machin Sheen.
Yeah. So he had a clip of Robert Jordan saying Machin Sheen instead of Machin Sheen, which was interesting. I think a lot of people thought it was funny, and they were putting Martin Sheen as a pronunciation for it. The next one was really funny. It was Nablus, which, to be honest with you, when I read that word, I thought it was Nibelus, or I say Nibelus, because I always pronounce the AE as an I, because in Aes Sedai it's pronounced
it
that way.
Be,
and
right?
That's,
yeah, he's
that's
all
the,
over
that's the
place.
Latin pronunciation of AE, it's I. But Robert, he had a clip of Robert Jordan saying Nebulus, which was kind of funny.
Yeah. That one, I feel like maybe he had a cold or something. I don't know.
I think like these are definitely going to be changed, because I think Sarah was saying, I don't remember if it was on the Dusty Wheel, that they really went through and tried to make it across the board, the sounds all the same.
Yeah.
It should be Nibelus if it's Aes Sedai and we're going with the same sounds across all the words. So they could be changing stuff like that just so they all match.
Yeah. And I mean, those are all old tongue words, right? If I'm correct, right? So you would think that they would be pronounced. It's not like you're using two different languages where it might be a different pronunciation with those letter combinations. So anyway, that one was a fun one. And then he finally got to the one that we all wanted to hear. He got to LAN, and he pulled a clip of Robert Jordan saying LAN, not lawn, not lawn. He said LAN. So we've got the clip. He posted it on Twitter. I retweeted it. We've got it. Robert Jordan saying LAN. So that's what I want. That's what I want to hear.
Robert Jordan climbed out of the grave and slapped everybody in the mouth.
Yes. So I felt so good. I feel so good today because of that.
Yeah,
so
it was a good moment.
On behalf of Talk Around Riyadh, I'd like to say, suck it. Suck it, world. It's life.
And I want to thank Matt for doing all of that research. Because it was funny. He said it was like well worth the hours of research. So I really hope it didn't spend hours on that doing it. But yeah, it was amazing, and it made me feel so good. And thank you even more for holding off on it till I was able to get on to the live show to actually see it happen live.
We're going to have to.
So there we go.
We'll cling to this until the show comes out, and then we have to change it.
Yes.
But we're going to hold on to it for the next however long, year or whatever it is till the show comes out.
Yeah. So the LAN saga ends there, for now at least.
To be continued.
So I have one piece of kind of real news too that I just wanted to talk about real quick. So the Clarkson twins, Paul and Michael, they are the writers for episode 3, A Place of Safety. And they did a Q&A on Instagram. And Narg was so kind enough to actually pull a clip from it of a question that was asked by Sarah Hardy. The question was, what was their favorite scene to write? And they, you know, they went through the whole spiel, like they really can't give anything away. But what they did say was that it was a Matt scene. Apropos, they stumbled over the pronunciation of Cawthon, and one of them said Cawthon, And the other said Cawthon, and they kind of giggled about it and were like a little embarrassed about not being able to pronounce the word. So that was kind of fun. Do you guys have any thoughts on the pronunciation?
I think it's Cawthon. That's what I always say.
Yeah, I do too. Tom?
Yeah, it's Cawthon. I mean, like when we went through the Matt episode, if you guys want to go back and try and find that, I talked towards the end about a lot of the influences, the historical influences of Matt, and the sounds of the influences are Cawthon. They're not Cawthon or anything like that. I wondered if they were doing that on purpose because of the hullabaloo over the week about the pronunciations, and they were kind of making a joke in reference to that. I really do.
I think it was all part of the pattern.
Yeah.
Not coincidence. So anyway, back to what they actually said, though, about it was they said it was a Matt scene. So we've got episode 3, A Place of Safety. So if, I don't know if the two of you want to delve into your episode breakdowns
What exactly did they say that they liked writing the scene about Matt? Did they say anything about
their favorite scene to write? It was a Matt scene. So episode 3, A Place of Safety. I looked back in my episode breakdown, as awful as it is, and probably as wrong as it is. I do have the White Bridge scene going on during that time, and I have some random Matt traveling during that time, but I couldn't think of anything specifically Matt.
Could be the end of Shadar Logoth. I don't know. I don't remember where I put that in my breakdown. I meant to look back.
It could be the scene of Matt taking the dagger in Shadar Logoth.
Yeah, because even if it's traveling with Rand and doing, even if it's like the when Rand channels, I wouldn't call that a Matt scene. So I'm just assuming it was like something with the dagger.
Yeah, there is no there is no Matt scene, I think, in the Eye of the World, at least.
Right, like other than him getting the dagger. They might, but then, I mean, they might, add little. Well, the Will Reeds pointed out
on the spray. That could be a good one, right?
We don't even know I don't know.
I don't know if they're going to do the spray, actually. I think all of us didn't have the spray in it. I don't know.
No.
I didn't either. I think that it's going to be Matt. Matt's like influences with the dagger. I had that being a lot of, I think I had that episode having, random Matt travel. I think it's going to be possibly him almost killing the Dark Friend. Is that Millie Skane? I'm not sure off the top of my head, but like his first attempt to murder with the dagger, or it could be his reaction to his reaction scenes to Rand channeling and being blinded. And it's just two sick, miserable people on the road together. So it could just be a lot of him griping about. It could be almost a comedic scene about him griping about having to take care of Rand while he doesn't feel good, blah, 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 blah. It could be something like that. The Eye of the World doesn't have any Matt point of view scenes in it, but
no,
there is a long stretch where it's just the two of them. And I think that the way I had that could very easily be episode 3.
Could be Matt maybe when they're playing for their, playing at inns for their food. Maybe could Matt be playing the flute or something, or attempting to juggle. Some stupid, silly scene like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's in the area that I have on my breakdown. So I think that's could be possible. Yeah, when he said Matt scene, when they said that, I was like, there is no real Matt scene, but...
You never know.
Never know. That's true. I guess we'll just have to wait and find out. Waffo.
Doesn't that mean watch and find out?
Yeah, I guess it does mean watch and find out. Yeah.
It could be the same thing.
I stand corrected. So that's all the news that I have for this week. And I really hope filming starts soon because we're really not getting much. So let's move on to our topic of the night. So we're delving into another character, one that was cast. We try to continue to stick to only characters who are cast. So this one, we're going to get into one of the Aes Sedai. All right, we're going to talk about the pronunciation of this one a little bit first. I'm going to say it how I used to say it, and then I'm going to say it the right way. So I have Leanne Sharif.
Mm.
So I looked this up. And I got two different pronunciations for this. So I have Leon Sharif, and that was in the Encyclopedia Watt, which, to be honest with you, I think has been wrong in a lot of pronunciations. But Tarvalon.net, the Wheel Time Wiki, and Maria Simmons all have it pronounced Liana Sharif.
Yep.
Agree? Tom, you agree?
It is Liana.
Jen?
I always say Leanne too, but when I'm looking it up, it did say Liana, so I'll defer to that. That one doesn't hurt me as much.
I just called her Lean the first time I read the books.
Are you serious?
Yep. Like Jean with an E. Yeah. But then I looked it up, and like Liana is how names like that are pronounced in the books. Like N-E at the end of a word is a separate syllable, or N-E breaks the E off as an sound.
Yeah.
So
Liana.
Yeah.
That, right. So I have no problem with that. I'll defer to that one, Liana, and I'll try my best to say it that way. All right, Jen, are you ready with the first appearance of Liana Sharif in the series?
I am. This is from The Great Hunt. The inner door opened and Liana appeared without her gilt-flamed staff. The Keeper of the Chronicles was as tall as most men, willowy and graceful, still beautiful, with coppery skin and short dark hair. She wore a blue stole, a hand wide instead of a shawl, for she sat in the hall of the tower, though as keeper, not to represent her Aja. Why do they say still beautiful? I don't get that.
That's a good question.
Because she's as tall as most men? Willowy and graceful. That's like a good,
What's the description before still beautiful? Was that her height?
The Keeper of the Chronicles was as tall as most men, willowy and graceful, still beautiful. I don't know why. Like, because she's tall, like a man, she wouldn't be, like, is that what vacation was? I don't know.
Willowy and graceful doesn't mean beautiful. It means that you're thin and you move nicely. It does, you know.
Well.
If you're tall and thin, like, willowy is not, it's not a negative adjective, but it's not necessarily a positive adjective. I think that he's just saying, you know, like most people in these books, she's very good looking.
Yeah, a lot of people we meet here are very good looking. So right. Good catch, though, Jen. I never noticed that. So I think you got the description there. The only other thing I have to add to that is they mentioned that she's almost as tall as Perrin, and I think Perrin's like 6'2", somewhere around that. So she's very tall. And they mentioned her hair, also about her hair being short, that it's only a little bit longer than Min's. I got a description of that when I think Min meets her and from her point of view. So let's get into the background of Liana Sharif. So she was born in Arad Doman in 952. All right. So that puts her at 46 when the series starts. So she's a little older than Suana Moraine.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother was a merchant who traded furs and timber. And her aunt Rasara taught the charms of the Domani women. She used to say that men are better sport than hawks. I like that. I like the Domani. I hope we get a lot of Domani culture when we meet her and any other Domani. She was sent to the White Tower at the age of 15, and she spent 5 years as a novice and 4 years as an accepted before being raised to the Shawl in 976, choosing the blue as her Aja. That's another pronunciation right there. Do you guys say Aja or Aja?
I say Aja, like okay. Raja from Aladdin.
I like it.
But with no
O. Tom, you agree?
When I'm talking casually, I say Aja. But when I'm talking about the books, I hit that second syllable. I say Aja.
Okay.
Like, I feel like that's the right way to say it. And I just don't want to put the effort in when I'm just talking about the books. But I think it is Aja. Ta-da.
Matt, if you're still listening, could you put some research in on that one? Could you just make a list and come up with some, just do the work for us? We have a new research team. It's Matt from the Dusty Wheel.
All right. So I just want to hit on this. So the 4 years as a novice, five years as a novice, 4 years as an accepted. They mentioned that it's considered a very short time by traditional standards. Now, we know that Moraine and Swan only spent 3 years as a novice and 3 years as an accepted. It seems like all the Aes Sedai we meet have all like spent very short times as novices and accepted, much shorter than traditional.
Right.
Is this another one of Robert Jordan's "everyone we meet is good looking" thing? Or
It's one of those where like she's the fastest. She was raised the fastest. No, this one is the new fastest. No, another one, the fastest we've ever seen. Like, okay, everyone's great. We got it.
I imagine. I mean, there are a metric ton of Aes Sedai that they don't mention how long it took to raise them. So that's, I imagine, true. All of those people are the normal like 8 to 10 years per level kind of people. And honestly, I imagine a lot of the Aes Sedai who are really like big sticklers for like, you are a novice, you are an accepted, and that's all you are the ones who had to suffer a lot to get to or past that point, right? But, you know, it's a big thing in the books. Like, the more powerful you are, the more like they just kind of defer you to pass on. And these are all stronger Aes Sedai, especially for the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That also speaks to how come they're mostly highly ranked. I think, again, like, you kind of just are treated as better than because you're stronger in the Aes Sedai culture.
Yeah. Can you think of anyone offhand that they mentioned spent a very long time? I remember, I think there's like, when they're in the tower training, they mentioned like an accepted or somebody who's been one for a really long time. But
well, I'd say I'm blanking on her name now. Jeez Louise. The other accepted that gets raised to like that interim accepted Aes Sedai level because she's like roughly equivalent to Nynaeve in the Saladar Tower with an F, or I'm blanking on her name.
Roughly equivalent to Nynaeve? No,
not in roughly, not in terms of power, but in terms of age and like where she was.
Are you talking about Théodren and Fallon?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm talking about that. Right. So like she was, I mean, Nynaeve was significantly older than the other ladies, and she was still unaccepted. So she spent a much longer period of time than they did, and she'd been in the tower for a while. And there is an Aes Sedai, and I can't remember which one. It's one of the ones who are relatively weak, where they said spent a very long time.
Okay.
Graduating to Aes Sedai levels. I wasn't prepared for this question, Joe. I apologize.
I'm sorry. I didn't. This isn't one that I planned on asking. I just noticed it. And I guess it is tied to how powerful you are, too. Right? Nynaeve didn't spend one day as a novice, so.
That's correct.
So, all right. So, moving on. As a novice, she was close friends with Swan and Sheriam, getting into a fair amount of trouble. Being raised to Aes Sedai approximately 2 years before Moiraine and Swan. You like how I really hit that Moiraine?
Moiraine. That was like Charlie Brown's teacher.
She's one of two blue sisters, along with Raffaella, who presented the shawl to Moiraine and Swan. I think we get that in A New Spring. That's from A New Spring. At this time, she renews her friendship with Swan and Moiraine and becomes truly dedicated ally to Swan. I think in A New Spring, Moiraine mentions at one point that she thinks that Leanne would do just about anything for Swan. You guys think there's any something else going on in there, maybe?
Oh, I don't know. Why not?
I think that
they're all pillow
I do
friends.
Think that there is intended to be a androgynous quality to Leanna, especially in the early books, that make it a marked difference that she so heavily, I remember a spoiler podcast, right, leans into her Dumani ways after the Silic. So I do think that, I don't know if there's a romantic relationship there, but I do think that they are, like the books at least kind of heavily lean on that, you know. That is subtext, if not, you know, actual text.
Do you think they'll play that up a little more in the show? Like the pillow friends?
Yes.
It'll be more outright and overt than Jordan does it, you know, explains it in the books or doesn't explain it really.
Yes. I think that the show is going to have sex. And I think that they're going to definitely lean into the openness with sexuality that the society possesses, even if it's not, you know, even if people are discreet about it.
But okay. Are pillow friends... Isn't it just that they're like, no, I mean, they're just around women constantly for like 20 years, some of them. So it's like just getting like, out their feelings. It's not necessarily like they're all lesbians together.
It's like, so you're saying it's kind of like
experimenting because they have nothing.
It's kind of like prison.
I guess. Yeah.
Yes.
Kind of. I mean, there's only women around and they all go there kind of when they're young and then they don't leave for a really long time. So, you know, they have to experiment a little bit.
That doesn't
necessarily mean that they're in like relationships is what I'm trying to say.
I think we're going to get a little bit, just even if it's just like one scene.
Yeah, I think we'll get it, but I don't think like Leanna is like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think they're all like necessarily lesbians because they're doing that. I think it's just like, well, you're the only people around, so we got to do something.
Yes. I think that's definitely the idea of it, Jen. That's how I always read it. But there are lesbians in the tower.
I'm sure there are some romantic relationships,
you know?
Right.
They did cut out, so in Game of Thrones, there is in the books, in the Song of Ice and Fire books, there is, later on in the series, Dany is one of her maids or something. She has a relationship with her, like a short relationship. It seems more of just like a, you know, not like a love relationship, more of just of like a sexual relationship with her that they cut out of the show. I don't know if that's any indication. But anyway, so let's move along. So in 988, when Swan is raised to the Amyrlin seat, it's no surprise that Leanna is chosen to be her Keeper of the Chronicles. While I was doing my research, I thought this was the perfect time to talk about what the Keeper of the Chronicles is and go into it. So I'm going to change gears a little bit and talk a little bit about Keeper of the Chronicles. So this position was once way back, it was simply the Amyrlin's secretary and official historian of the White Tower, but the position kind of evolved over time. The keeper is chosen by the Amyrlin seat and is considered second in authority. Although traditionally she is chosen from the same Aja as the Amyrlin, there have been cases where she is not. We get an example later on in the series. Almost invariably in these instances, the keeper was imposed on the Amyrlin by the Hall, cases being a political quid pro quo, or this one I pulled out of the companion and it didn't make too much sense to me. So maybe you guys have some opinion on this. And it said, or to keep an eye on Amarlin seen as possibly unreliable. Mm-hmm. So if there was an Amarlin who was, why would they raise an Amarlin who's unreliable? And then the same people vote on the keeper to keep an eye on that person.
Because unreliable doesn't mean unpliable. So there have been times in the Tower's history where the Hall has instilled an Amarlin to control. And if they feel like that person is easily controllable, but if without guidance can make rash or inappropriate decisions, they want somebody who's with her all the time. That's my reading of that.
Okay.
Does the Hall vote on the keeper, or does the Amarlin choose the keeper?
Oh, I'm going to get into that. That was my next point.
Oh, okay. Jen. You just said the Hall.
You're always one step ahead of me.
I thought you were getting me confused. So go ahead.
She must be confirmed by the Hall of the Tower. So the Amarlin picks them, but they have to be confirmed by the Hall of the Tower.
Oh.
And here's an interesting tidbit that I didn't know about. So while she's confirmed by the Hall of the Tower, she can be removed from her position only by the Hall, requiring the greater consensus. And the sitters of the Aja from which the keeper was raised are excluded from that type of vote.
Okay.
Which I thought is kind of weird. Why would the Hall be the one to dismiss the keeper? It should be the Amarlin, but I don't know. So she wears a stole in the color of her Aja, but no longer belongs to or represents her Aja, and carries a staff with her. It has a gilt flame top. So question that I wanted to pose. So what do you think about the keeper wearing a stole, the color of an Aja, but no longer belonging to or representing to that Aja? What is the point of that?
I think it's just to show that she's not above everyone, kind of the way that the Amarlin is. She's chosen by the Amarlin. She's kind of just like the Amarlin's secretary, basically. Like, she has to go through the information before she presents it to her to, like, see what's important. She, like, announces her. So I just think, like, the Amarlin is, like, really, like, the top one. She's, like, a kind of above everybody, but I don't think the keeper is necessarily, definitely not on her level. So I think that's why she gets a stole, but I think she still wears her Aja to kind of show that she's below the Amarlin.
Yeah, it just seems weird, though. If you're saying that they're no longer part of the Aja, at least during that time, I imagine when their term is over, I don't know if there's been any instances where someone has not been keeper any longer and then goes back to her Aja, although I shouldn't say that. There's actually happens in the book, but to Liana. But, or no, she switches Ajas, right? Does she go to green when she goes back?
She goes to green, yeah.
She does switch. Okay, so maybe that's not a good example. But it seems like if you want to... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that somebody just said this in chat too, that it's kind of like if it's a situation where the Amarlin and the keeper are the same Aja, then it kind of like lets everybody know like what Aja they are. But then there's like a lot of examples where they're not from the same. In that case, it wouldn't really make sense.
Yeah, that it kind of bothers me, to be honest with you, because if you're trying to make it known and try to distance... You're trying to distance the Amarlin and the keeper from the Aja, because the Amarlin's supposed to represent all the Ajas, and fine, she wears the seven striped soul. But then you're still saying, yeah, but look at the keeper who's a blue Aja. You know, don't forget that, even though they're supposed to be. Well, do you think it's something like that the Hall or the other Aes Sedai said, let's make them wear the color of their Aja so nobody forgets really who their allegiance to is? Or something to that effect? That's the kind of vibe I get from it.
I'm leaning more towards Jen. I think that there's only one person in the tower who belongs to all the Ajas, and that is the Amarlin, and nobody else does. So it's not like the keeper is the vice Amarlin, where if the Amarlin's deposed or stilled or gets killed, that the keeper becomes the new Amarlin. Like, it's a package deal, but she's just the highest Aes Sedai. Like, she's the highest positioned Aes Sedai. She's not the Amarlin. That's the only person who is without Aja. So she has a titled position. She's in some ways above the Hall. And so she gets a stole instead of a shawl. But she's not, there's only one person. There's only one who's everybody. And that's the Amarlin. And I think it would be different if she were truly second in command, where she, like, it was the vice president that in times of great need, she would take over. But that's not what happens. In times of great need, if the Amarlin's indisposed, the Hall takes over until they pick a new Amarlin. So I don't think there's a need for her to be singled out in that way. I do think that there is a an element of like, there is an element of like, we remember where you come from because you show us all the time to it.
Yeah.
I do think that that's part of it, but I don't think that's the primary reason. I think it's more the Amaranth is special than the Keeper is not.
Yeah. And you're right. The Keeper is not. And we'll get into that more. I have a little more about that. She speaks. So here you go, right here. So she speaks only for the Amaranth seat. So the Keeper does not speak for other Aes Sedai or all the Ajahs or her whole Ajah or anything like that. She speaks only for the Amaranth seat, who represents all Aes Sedai. And part of her responsibility is to announce the Amaranth to the Hall of the Tower. The Keeper can't enter the hall without the Amaranth and cannot partake in discussions in the hall. So even when the Keeper's in the hall, they're not allowed to partake in any of the conversation. And she is the one, however, who calls for any votes that need to take place. So that's kind of an odd dynamic right there. Keeper can't enter the hall without the Amaranth. And I think traditionally the Amaranth cannot enter the hall without the Keeper to announce her. Mm-hmm. It does happen, I think, occasionally, but it's not tradition. And then you can't take part in any of the discussions, but you do get to call for votes. It's almost like the Keeper is really, I don't know, it just seems like the Keeper, and I think there's a quote somewhere. Here, I have it right here. As second to the Amaranth, the Keeper has no real authority over Aes Sedai except what the Amaranth chooses to give her.
Mm-hmm. She's like an administrative assistant, basically.
Well, that's how it started out.
I think she's more like, if you want to talk about, you know, president and Congress, if you want to make that kind of corollary, the Keeper is a cross between the vice president and the chief of staff, right? So they're the gatekeeper. They're the person who you have to kind of deal with before you deal with the primary person. Mm-hmm. The vice president, in terms of the Senate, is that role. They do have a tiebreaker vote if necessary, but mostly they literally are there to open and close ceremonies and to be like, okay, let's do a vote. But like, they don't do anything. For most vice presidents, that's why you see a lot of historical quotes about how it's like the least powerful position in the country. And similarly, like, you do have presidents who empower their VPs to do a lot. And mm-hmm. then those people end up being powerful on their own. So I think it's more like that. I don't think it's administrative. I do think it's more like a chief of staff kind of position where they really are running things for the Amaranth. The Amaranth doesn't have the shouldn't, and I think that's part of Alaeddin's kind of administrative downfall, is they shouldn't have their fingers in every, you know, micro detail. That's the Keeper's mm-hmm. job, to like make sure that the clocks are, you know, that people are clocking in on time. She should be thinking more big picture style.
So wait, are you saying that Eladia's fault was that she was micromanaging too much, or that she let Alviarin control too much?
Oh, well, I think that she was too busy micromanaging things that were unimportant and okay. like signing things off to Alviarin that were important rather than focusing on things that really matter.
Gotcha. Right?
She had a lot of faults. That wasn't the only one, but I don't think that she wasn't dumb. And she kind of, because of her focus, she got snowed a lot.
So one thing, too, I forgot to add, and I think I forgot to put this in here, but also the Keeper of the Chronicles also runs an eyes and ears network as well for the Amaranth, and I guess for the position. And I think they mentioned Lyanna was one of the few or only, or they happen to mention that she also ran an eyes and ears network within Tar Valon, which was unusual. They noted that as unusual. So any other points that I missed on Keeper of the Chronicles before I move on to a little bit more of Lyanna?
They got a dope staff. I don't know if you mentioned the staff.
I did mention the staff with the gilt flame top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's all I wanted. I want to ask a question to you guys at the end about, well, we'll do it now before we get back into Lyanna. And again, remember, we're a spoiler podcast, but who do you think the next Keeper is going to be? At the end of the books, do you have any ideas, any thoughts about who, and I won't say this or whatever, but who the Amaranth will pick as Keeper after the books are over?
So Cadswain becomes Amaranth, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. That's yes.
Oh yeah. So if you were trying to avoid spoilers, but yeah, you mentioned we're spoilers podcast. Yeah. So Cadswain is Amaranth. Who would Cadswain pick as her Keeper?
Yeah.
Oh my Lord. That's a tough one.
I can't remember enough of the Aes Sedai to make an informed decision on that one.
I'm not that far in my reread yet, and it's been so long since I read the last. Like, I literally read the last three books like around the time they came out. A Memory of Light came out, so it's been that long for me.
All right,
so I can't think of Aes Sedai that are alive who she might pick. I'm trying to remember who was in her group. Right, she had like kind of like a group of Aes Sedai that would kind of hang out with her a lot.
Yeah, but she didn't really respect a ton of them. I have some ideas. I don't think she respected them enough to elevate them to a position that she considered important. But some of them she may have. I'll save that. And when we post the episode live, I will ask the question, I guess, on our social media accounts. Because I am curious for what people may think of that.
That's a good question, actually. That's a good tweet to put out there, Tom. I like that.
Okay.
All right. So moving on to Lyanna. So when we get to her in the books, and I'm not going to go too far into it, obviously, as I usually do, we try to keep it to the beginning of what we think is going to be in the first season. So this is really just, she doesn't appear until the Great Hunt. So this is really just her initial appearance. We don't get to meet her until the first time until the Great Hunt. She is part of the group of Aes Sedai that travels to Faldar with, of course, Swan the Armorlin. She is one of the Aes Sedai who partially heals Matt from the dagger during that trip. And then she's also part of the group later on that heals him fully when they get back to the tower. Just some, I guess, stats on her, because we got to go into that. She was considered strong in the One Power, scoring a 14 in her One Power strength level, according to the companion, which was just below Swan. And it puts her on par with the likes of Galena, Leandrin, Pavara, Shirium, and Rhian Corley, who was the head of the kin. So that's her power ranking. And like her story doesn't really start to pick up really until the Shadow Rising on that whole story arc where the tower splits. So my question to you based on that is, do you anticipate that we'll see a larger role for her earlier in the TV show? And how do you think they'll manage that, right? Because you don't think they're going to bring her in and just put her in one scene and then we're not going to see her again for a season or two, right?
Probably not. Do you think they might bring her in on the scene with where they're talking to Rand about him being the Dragon Reborn and all that, that where it's just in the book, it's just Moraine and Swan and Verin?
Because she is in one of those conversations.
Them. She is, but I don't think she's in one where like it's just
she's in
Moraine
one.
And Swan, but she's not in the one with Rand. I don't believe she is. I think it's
no,
Verin,
I think you got
right?
it. I think you're Verin you got is it reversed.
I don't think so, because isn't Verin talking about what she read in the Blood Calls Blood and all that? I think she's, and she
That's
knows
not
about
the
him.
So she's not in the scene with Moraine.
Okay. There's a scene where I was breezing through it, and there's a scene where Swan says, like, oh, Lyanna won't say anything or something like that. But I don't think that's the scene with Rand. I thought that was just Verin.
No, she's in the scene with Rand, definitely.
Oh, she is?
Yeah, I'm most positive about that. She's not in it. There's a scene with just Moraine where when Moraine comes to first see Swan and she kind of kicks Lyanna out.
Okay. All right, then I'm getting confused.
I don't remember the one with Verin.
No. We don't. I'm assuming that Verin's going to be in it, and we're all praying and hoping, but we don't have a Verin cast. I don't think Lyanna could like take over the role of Verin, because it's obviously two very different characters and two different stories going on. But I don't know. She might just be a little bit more involved in what's going on in the beginning. I'm not sure. Now I'm getting confused, because I really thought she wasn't in that scene. I feel like I have to look back.
I might be wrong, too, but I'm pretty sure she was in the one with Rand. But yeah, because we don't really see... I'm trying to think now off the top of my head. I guess, do we get Lyanna I guess we get her when they go back to the tower to train. Do we get some of Lyanna? We might get a scene or two with her. I know we get a scene with Min and her, right? Later on. But I think that might be in the Shadow Rising too.
I'm looking at the chapter right now.
Yeah. Tom, your thoughts?
I think they could just, basically anytime you see Swan, she could be there, right? And like, you can leave it at that. I think that she's going to be more of an active confidant, that she may not be in on the Moraine and Swan like plan from the get-go, but I think that Swan sees her as somebody she'll have total trust in, which it'll be more justified that she gets stilled as well, right? As opposed to the way, like, it's kind of like, well, we think you knew. Yeah, I think that they can kind of do that. And I do think the fact that they're going to somewhat accelerate the storylines of the books means that, like, her storyline will kick in sooner than season 5 or 6 or whatever. So yeah, I don't think that she's going to be like what I would consider a secondary character's importance, right? I don't think that she's going to jump, which is where I would say Swan is in the books, right? Like mm-hmm. Swan is somebody who's got her own storylines, has her own plot developments, and Lyanna doesn't really have that as much. She kind of supports Swan and Egwene and other characters in their journeys. But I don't think she's going to necessarily get elevated that much, but I think she's going to basically be there, the Marcy to Swan's peppermint patty.
I like that analogy.
She's not in that scene. She's outside the room when Lan brings him, and she tells Lan he can't go in, and then he goes in. So she's not in the room with them.
Oh, okay.
So maybe they'll like involve her more in that.
Do you think we could possibly get some other Aes Sedai maybe combined into her?
Possibly, yeah. There's a ton of them. I can't think of who off the top of my head, but probably. Yeah,
well, there's going to be a lot of things over the course of the books where, like, there's 40 Aes Sedai in a room and they all have, like, one line where they're going to say, okay, well, we're going to make that 6 Aes Sedai.
So you know who I could see them combining her with? So the other two Aes Sedai who show up at Faldara, the two representatives from the Blue Aja are, I think, Shirium and Anaya, right? No, wait, Shirium's not there, right? No. Is it Shirium there?
No, Shirium's not there. Remember. I think they meet her at the tower.
Okay, it's Anaya and somebody else. I could see them combining her with Anaya.
Yeah.
Give her a larger role. She's the one who gives Egwene the dream, Tir Angriel.
Is that the one she talks to, like, before she gets on the boat? About
which
the
boat?
When they're going to Tar Valon. Don't they go on a boat?
They do take a boat to Tar Valon.
Okay. I'm picturing the scene that I just read it not too long ago. She talks to somebody like before she gets on the boat. I can't remember who now.
Is Anaya the one who is a dreamer?
No, she's the one who gives Egwene, though, I think, the dream to Angriel.
No, doesn't.
No.
No, Varin does that.
That's Varin. You're right. It is Varin. Who's?
I think Anaya.
Sorry.
Who's the dreamer who gets killed?
No, Anaya is the one who thinks Egwene is a dreamer. That's right. Thank you, delusions. Oh, and the other blue sister at Faldara was Megan.
She's out. She's going to be a body in the background.
So I'm sorry. Anaya is the one who thinks Egwene is a dreamer, not the one who gives. That's right. Varin gives her the dream to Angriel when she gives her. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I think they could combine Lian with Anaya, maybe cut Anaya and make Lian that role. Possibility. But either way, I think they're going to try to play up a lot of these side characters a lot more because you're not going to bring her in for like one or two small scenes for first two seasons, I don't think.
I do think that all of the Aes Sedai that we have met are going to be based, like all the ones that were cast, like announced in that one thing, are basically in one episode. Maybe like a scene or two in a second episode. But I really do think they're going to be highly focused on one big set piece.
That's if we don't get earlier Tar Valon scenes or Tar Valon scenes.
Yeah, we could get flashback scenes, which I do think that is going to happen. That's why I do think that there's a possibility that they'll be in some scenes in another episode.
Or if it happens like you think, Tom, and they're traveling, they have Loghain with them and traveling with Loghain.
Yep.
Then you'd probably see more of her too. She could be part of the capture of Loghain.
I don't think that she'll be part of the capture of Loghain because I don't think that's something that the Keeper would do. And I think that they'd have to explain it. But I do think that they're going to have her, like when you meet all the Aes Sedai, she'll be there whenever that is. And like I said, I think that they're going to do that earlier, that they're going to change how they get to Faldara. And I'm going to do that with the Aes Sedai.
All right. So that's what I have on Lyanna. Let's get into, unless you guys have anything else you want to bring up before, I'm just going to talk briefly about Jennifer Chiang Garcia.
No, I'm good. Good.
All right. Did I miss anything, Jen? Did I hit all your questions and answers?
Yeah, no, you're good.
Did you have any questions about anything about the boar this week?
Not this week. I can't wait till our boar episode, guys.
Yes. We'll do it soon.
Pages and pages of questions.
I'll have pages and pages of answers, hopefully.
Great.
Okay. So Jennifer Chiang Garcia, who was cast as Arlianne. So just a little bit about her. She was born in Vancouver, Canada. So she's Canadian and is of Mexican-Korean heritage, which is an awesome mixture, I think. So she's done a bunch of television. In 2016, she won a Leo Award for Best Actress for her part in the critically acclaimed web series The Drive. So if you're asking what the Leo Awards are, they are a British Columbian film and television industry awards that are held in Vancouver. So she's an award-winning actress. So she's done a lot of TV work. Most recently, she's in, I don't know if the show's still on, but it might actually be over. She was in a sci-fi series, Van Helsing. She's been a bunch of other stuff. I was scrolling down looking through this, and I saw that she was in the A-Team movie.
Oh,
I don't remember her. Yeah, she's listed as Lynch Woman.
Oh God,
Lynch's the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah, Lynch is the
That's good.
No, yeah, not that time. Not that kind of Lynch.
Okay,
so she might be a soldier. I don't know if she's a soldier or.
Okay, I think I might remember her. I've definitely seen that movie.
Yeah, I've seen it a few times. So yeah, what do you guys think? First, well, I'm not going to say first thoughts because we already did that a while ago. What are your thoughts now that we know more about Lyanna? And Jennifer Chiang Garcia.
I love her. I think physically, I think she looks great. She's 5'10". So that's she's definitely got the tall thing down.
She's got the willowy, the long willowy.
She looks
still beautiful.
Still.
Yeah. I haven't seen her act in anything, but I've seen, you know, just following her Instagram and kind of knowing her personality, I have a feeling she's going to be really good. And I am the only person on this podcast who called that she was going to be playing Liana.
Yes. So
that was good.
I have that going for me.
I thought maybe she was going to be smart. So wait, Jen. So something hit me, right? When you said still beautiful again, was Robert Jordan dropping us a hint that she was going to be stilled?
Stilled and beautiful. No,
I'm still beautiful. Was that it? Was that why you put, do you think that's why you put that there?
I don't know. I'll have to see if he wrote still about anything in Swan's description. Let's find it.
We'll have to make a note of that for when we do Swan to see if there's anything similar in there.
And did he call Logan gentle at any point?
So I think that, to Jen's point, I did not think that she was originally going to play Liana, because while I think like she physically matches the description for the most part, I thought her face, with the exception of the fact that Swan is described as pale on some occasions, like her face and her background, I thought that she could be Swan as well. And I wasn't familiar with any of her roles at the time that we were doing that kind of conjecture. But I do think, like, to Jen's point, kind of like getting to know her via social media and things of that nature in the interim time, I think that she's going to do a very good job with it. I am curious if I always pictured Domani as kind of Indian.
Yeah.
I want to say that, like, with a coppery skin and whatnot. And I am curious if that's going to change, or if it doesn't have to, because, as you know, was kind of brought forth to a lot of us over the last week or two, cultures aren't homogenous in these books. So it doesn't really make a difference what somebody looks like. I'm very happy with her casting, and I think that she's going to bring a lot of energy. I'm curious to see if they're going to play up the dichotomy of like early Liana versus later Liana.
Yeah. So I guess maybe we should say that for another episode, but just an idea. So there was a lot of talk about, you know, the Ageless Face and how we're going to handle that. And, you know, I was always of the camp that the Ageless Face isn't really that important to the series. They don't really need to do it. If they can do it and pull it off, great. But I think it's really risky to try it. What do you think will happen? Because when they get stilled, they looked very different. How do you think they're going to handle that in the show? Is that going to be part of? Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. You think they'll get into it?
I don't think they would bother doing that. If they're not going to do the Ageless Face, if they're just going to have it be what it is, then I don't see why they would have to change the way they look. Just be another difficult thing to pull off.
I have to say, this is one of the castings where I think the fan art really, like, I've seen fan art that looks almost exactly like Jennifer Cheon Garcia for Liana. So I thought that was pretty amazing. I think she is perfect for the part. She definitely has the look of it. You know, like you said, from what I've seen on Instagram and stuff, she seems to have that personality of it, and she seems to have that attitude. I think she's going to have to rein it in for the first half until she gets stilled, and then starts, you know, reverting back to what her aunt Rosara taught her. So it'll be interesting to see that change in her character, and I think it'll be really fun for her to play.
I do want to remind listeners and things of that nature that we really try when we do these character breakdowns to stick as much as we can in detail to the character as we expect to see them in the first season of the show or so. So Liana is a character who I think becomes a lot more interesting to talk about after the stilling that happens to her, and
yeah,
how she chooses to overcome that is an interesting subject that we will address again on a later episode. I don't want people who are like, how are you not talking about all of the interesting and fun stuff that she does later on? But that's with purpose, not through oversight. Okay.
Yeah. I feel like if we went into a whole character throughout the entire series, it would take us multiple parts.
We'd still be talking about Rand.
We would be. We'd be on Rand part 8.
Yeah.
Part 32. Yeah. So that's why it's tough with some of these characters too, like Liana being one of them, that she doesn't appear until the Great Hunt. So there's not much to talk about her. But I mean, we do get some new spring background, which is great. And then we also got to talk about the Keeper of the Chronicles, which was a perfect time to talk about it.
I think we had plenty to talk about. Fill the whole show.
We did fill a whole show. So I'm proud. All right.
Good for you.
Any final thoughts, Jen, Tom, on Liana, the Keeper of the Chronicles, Jennifer Cheon Garcia?
I think we've touched on everything I wanted to touch on. I'm excited to see her once again. Can't wait to see the show.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a character that has the ability to be made deeper. And I think that may happen in this show, that she may be a more impactful character in the show than she may be in the books.
Okay. So I want to thank everyone for listening. Check us out on social media. Join our Discord channel. Also, oh, I almost forgot, Jen.
Something? Yeah.
Yes. So I forgot. I thought about it now. See, Jen, this is when you're supposed to stop me.
I just thought about it when you started wrapping it up.
So before I get into that, we have another review that we wanted to read. Jen's going to read us a nice review that somebody wrote about us because we like to do that. We like to hear good things about ourselves. It makes us feel.
Why not?
It makes us feel good.
This review is from Apple Steve, and it's titled "The Best." I like it already. If you're looking for a fun podcast talking about the Wheel of Time, both the books and the upcoming TV show, this is the podcast you want. After listening to several different podcasts, this is the most enjoyable and consistent one I have found. I also love how well-connected they are to the rest of the Wheel of Time community. If you follow other Wheel of Time content producers, they will most likely reference this podcast and even collaborate with the hosts. I like that. That was a good one.
Thank you, Apple Steve. We really appreciate your review.
Yeah, but we appreciate your podcast critiques as well.
Yes.
So Apple Steve, we will ship some Granny Smith to you as soon as you send us your address. Dad jokes, everybody. Dad jokes. No, that's really nice. I didn't read that one. That was a very nice review.
Yeah, I like that one.
Thank you, Apple Steve. Just a reminder to, you know, leave us a review, rate us and review us, share our podcast with your friends, tell people about us. You know, all of our info for our social media is in the show notes, so you can check that out and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. There's also a link to our Discord channel. You can jump on in and hang out with other awesome Wheel of Time people that we like to chat with. You can listen to our show live that way too. And also on Wednesdays at 8:30 Eastern time, you can catch Tom on Audio Dungeon. Tom?
Okay. So Audio Dungeon is a live video webcast. We stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. It's a tabletop role-playing D&D-esque game self-created by the Dungeon Master where it's a lot of improv, comedy, and drama. It's a lot of fun. It's another very highly engaged fandom with a lot of cool people on it. So if you're interested in Dungeons & Dragons or things like that, please check it out. Even if you can't watch it live because 8:30 Eastern Standard Time, there are other good content creators putting out content that I would also recommend watching. So it's a lot of fun.
Check that out. Especially if you love Dungeons and Dragons or if you love, you know, you want to see more or hear more of Tom. I think between the last episode and now, the hit single I Kissed a Drakkar was released.
Yes.
So go check that out. Remind me, Jen, I'll put the link in the show notes for this one too. An awesome collaboration between Jen and Andrel, the Bard of Time. That was really awesome. And it was, I hope we get some more of those. Do you guys have anything else in the works, Jen?
We do not currently, no. But you never know.
Thanks again to Matt Hatch and the Dusty Wheel for the awesome pronunciation segment. It made my day. It made my week. So thanks so much for that. Check them out too in the Dusty Wheel. He's on like almost every day of the week now.
That's true.
So check him out. It's a really good show. We were on there once as guests as well. I've been on there a couple of times. It's a lot of fun. So go check that out as well. Thanks everyone for listening and you'll hear us next time.